right. We the gospel for in this series for Easter 6 continues in John 15. Last week we had I am the vine, you are the branches, so forth, verses 1 to 8. And that, of course, is a very powerful image that shows, if you could say it this way, the holistic nature of what we sometimes call justification and sanctification. That is, justification being, I'm a branch, he made me a branch, and now sanctification, I bear fruit because I'm joined to the vine, and so forth. And you have a similar kind of a holistic pericope in verses 9 to 17, except you do get the fruit-bearing metaphor at the end, but most of the time it's the Father has loved me, I have loved you, remain in my love, love one another. And so it's really, you know, it kind of leaves most, for the most part, it leaves the agricultural image, and yet it's the same kind of complete package, if I could say it that way. And so one of the things I think a preacher can do or should do is to say, okay, the text is about, you know, the love of God in Jesus for the disciples and the disciples' love for them. And so that's kind of the what, how that's all connected. But then to be very deliberate and say, okay, what impact do I want to try to have with a sermon based on this text? And you could do any number of things with it, of course. If you're addressing the problem of people who are happy to say that Jesus loves them, but they don't want to love anybody else, well, you can, you know, take this theology and attack that issue. Or if you're speaking to a congregation and you're afraid that maybe what needs to be heard is, no, even though your love falters, nevertheless, Christ's love for you is nevertheless prevailing. So in other words, you know, there's the what of the text, and then there's the so what, and you can go in different directions, and I was just reminded of that. It's kind of a basic point for preaching and teaching, but so it's always good to kind of have a clear target in mind, because as we all know, when we aim at nothing, we usually hit it, if I say it that way. Happily, this is the Gospel of John, and the Greek is pretty easy, relatively speaking. We've been doing Hebrews in Greek Club, and that's a nightmare compared to this. So we'll kind of go through the text verse by verse. Verse 9, just kathos agapizen me ha pater, just as the Father loved me. There's our friend agapao. Now kago is just kai and ego together. Also I loved you. Again, a person could tarry there for a long time, right? That the love of Jesus for his disciples is similar to the love that the Father has for the Son. Now we have an imperative from Menno. Remain in my love. Here's the parallel with the prior unit is, if my words remain in you, right? And you are already clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. So I think we could say that in answer to the question, well, how do I remain? How do we remain in Jesus' love? The answer is we stay in his word. I mean, that's the primary message of the word of Jesus. So the imperative there is probably amounts to an invitation. I invite you to remain in my love. Verse 10, if you tereo, if you hold fast or keep my commands, my entelases, you will remain. Meneta is punctuated as a future indicative. The only difference there is the circumflex. And the only people that care about such things are the people who teach elementary Greek on a regular basis. You will remain in my love, just as I, tetereka, have kept my Father's commands, and I am remaining in the love of him. The word order looks a little funny to us English speakers there. Now this I think could be understood in two ways, but I think the way it should be understood is that the holding fast to the commandments is evidence. It shows that you're remaining in the love of Jesus. Just as the fact that Jesus has kept the Father's commandments shows that he remains in the Father's love. again, the one causes the other, if I could say it that way. And so again, it's all together, and you have to decide, you know, what this holistic message of, if I could say it this way, love that produces obedience, holding fast to commandments, you know, that theology, okay, what do I need to address or assuage or destroy or whatever, you know, with the sermon. So verse 11, these things I have spoken to you for this purpose. Now here's a henna clause. Henna in John is very flexible, more flexible in John than I think any other New Testament writers. It doesn't nearly always mean purpose, although I think that's what this one is expressing. So I have spoken these things to you in order that my joy, he kara he emeh, may be in you. If you're looking at the Nestle Aland or the Greek text, the verb is actually the letter eta with all those little extra things on it. I think I counted once that the letter eta can be 9 different words, depending on whether it's rough or smooth or, you know, circumflex. Or this is actually, believe it or not, the subjunctive of the linking verb. And it's my colleague Dr. Robbie is lifting his glasses up so that he can look at the diacritical marks there. So it's just in order that my joy may be. It's all it is. It's just the subjunctive of amen in you, plural. It's always plural, right? Kind of the praise is always corporate, right? So the pronouns is always y'all, in y'all, and in order that your joy, plerothe, may be fulfilled. Well, here's another, you know, we live in the land of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? Well, this is a different kind of message, right? That it's the words of Jesus, both bringing his love and then offering his commandments to us together that brings joy. My mind, just since we just went through a psalm, I just flipped to, you know, that common refrain, you know, I love your Torah, O God, right? Blessed is the man, and so forth. And this too would link up nicely with the prior lesson on remaining in Jesus' words. So now Jesus actually in verse 12 fleshes out the content of the chief entele, the chief command. So haute esten he entele he eme. This is my commandment. Now here we have henna that's in this verse, I think, virtually always taken as explanatory of this. So it's not expressing purpose. This is my commandment. What's the this? That you love one another. Kathos, here's the comparison again, and just as I loved you. And so again, that holistic vine and branches, loved and loving move, if I could say it that way. We say it, the gospel produces good works, right? And it's actually true, and we didn't just make it up. We get it from Jesus, right? Now, here's an interesting image, and I'll go ahead and venture forth an opinion on this next couple of verses. Let's just take maybe 13 through 15 together. Now, you got to go down 4 words to get the subject, udes, no one has, eke, and then you back up to the beginning to get the direct object. Maidzana is from megas. It means big or great, and this is oddly the comparative. It means greater, right? And it modifies then agapein. The word order here is a little bit of a nightmare. No one has a greater love of this. That's the so-called genitive of comparison, right? After a comparative adjective. No one has a greater love than this. Now let's explain this again, the henna again being explanatory, that tis someone, 4 words later, they is actually the aorist subjunctive of tithame, to put or lay, that someone put the life of him, his life, on behalf of his philon, on behalf of his friends. Now I want to come back to that, so we'll just keep going. Verse 14, you, And then four words later, the verb, esta, you are, philoi, predicate nominative, you are the friends of me, aeon, if you do, ha, the things which I am commanding to you. Now, that's the first clue that we might need to rethink what it means to be friends here. Right? Because if I said to Paul, you are my friend, if you do what I command you, Paul says, what kind of a friendship is that? Right? See? So we'll come back to that idea. I just want to kind of plant that seed because I think there's some really beautiful gospel if we can tweak this image a little bit. Verse 15, no longer am I calling you, lego often means just to say, but here, no longer am I calling you douluses, slaves. Why? Because the slave does not oiden, does not know what the Lord of him is doing. But you, ereka, this is, believe it or not, the perfect of lego. There are no letters the same in the fourth principal part. I have called you philouses, friends, huti, because all things which I heard from the Father of me, I made known to you. That's what Jesus is busy doing in the upper room, right? He's making known to them the things that he's heard from the Father. Now, they don't get it yet, but afterwards, as John says, they believed, right? And then verse 16, maybe we'll just start that and then go back to this image of friends. Uk humes me ex alexaste. This is from ek legomai, of all things. It's deponent, and it means to choose. So you, plural, didn't choose me, but I, emphatic, chose you. And I appointed you, I tithemed you, purpose, in order that you might go and bear fruit, and the fruit of you might remain. And now we're moving too far. Let me back up to the image of friend. I want to put this out a little bit tentatively. I've seen it in the big shots mentioned, but it makes complete sense to me. The parallel, if you flip over to John 19, is the trial of Jesus before Pilate. And if you look at John 19, verse 12, because of this, Pilate was seeking to release him. But the Jews, ek kraugazon, cried out, saying, if you release this guy, you are not the friend of Caesar. Now, of course, in the ancient world, there was obviously friendship between peers, right? But there was also the friendship between a benefactor and someone of lower status, right? So Paul, Dale Meyer would be our benefactor, and we're his friends, right? See? Now, if you go back to John 15, Jesus says, you're my friends if you do what I command you. And so I think that the image here is that Jesus is the Lord, in fact, which he is, and he's chosen them, and he's given them commands. So this means that Jesus is of higher status, that he's the big guy, and they're the little guys, right? They are his friends, okay? Now, when you take that ancient understanding of benefaction and friendship, high status and low status, then something really becomes amazing when Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his inferiors, if I could say it that way. You see? Now, it could be the other way around, and that's the way it's often taken, but it's interesting that the commentators will, if they take friendship as the normal way, they'll say, well, of course, this isn't exactly speaking true, because a lot of people are willing to lay down their lives for people that they love. But if in the ancient context, the high-status person, in other words, is saying, greater love, it's like Caesar laying down his life for Pilate, if I could say it that way. See, now, at this point, it doesn't change the gospel, but it sharpens it, right? And so, again, what it can also do is it really emphasizes on this whole holistic thing that the love of God, the love of Jesus produces love in us. I mean, it really shows that the big deal is the love that he has for his disciples, that the superior, the Lord, the master, is willing to lay down his life for his philoi, for his people that he chose, for his people to whom he gives his commandments. See, this isn't the way it works, except in God's economy, in God's tzedakah, right? This is the way, in fact, it works, that this is how God comes into the world to save, right? Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and the difference is the slaves don't know what's going on, but the friends, he actually reveals what he's doing to his friends. Exactly. So I just think that may be right. It's one of those projects that's on the list, you know, to research and actually try to track it out. And I don't think it's a crazy idea, but it does, I think, make aspects of this text really come out and shine in some new ways. Let's see. We've got a few more minutes, I think, maybe. Drop down to verse 16. So, again, we read part of it. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I appointed you that you go. Now, again, this is the result of the love. This is the result of the laying down the life, right? That you go and bear fruit, and that your fruit remain. And now we have a clause that I think gets, in fact, I checked it out. I looked at a couple of commentaries this morning. It's almost as if it's read without a context, which creates all kinds of trouble, if I could say it that way. In order that, ha te'an, whichever thing ever, I te'isete, you may ask the Father in my name, do, this is from ditto me, he may give to you, plural. Now, you know, one commentator even says, now Jesus here shifts from the topic of loving to talking about prayer in general. And I'm thinking, I don't think so. In fact, look up at verse 7, back all the way up into verse 7, which is part of last Sunday's gospel. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you want, and it will happen for you. Now, what's Jesus been talking about? He's been talking about bearing fruit. He's been talking about, forgive me, good works of love and joy and peace and patience and kindness. See, so what is this verse 7 referring to? Ask whatever you want. I'll tell you what it's referring to. Ask the Father to help you produce fruit, and you'll do it. See? Lord, I want to be able to exhibit more love. I want to be able to exhibit more peace. And the Father will say, you got it. Right? In other words, this is not some sort of general theology of prayer. Right? At least it seems not to me. And I think that we can take, if we take the two henna clauses in verse 16 back up there as parallel, then it works pretty slick. And I appointed you that you go and bear fruit and your fruit remain. That is to say, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give to you. And so as the people of God leave, you know, on Sunday morning, or as we leave right now from, you know, lectionary at lunch, and I think Dr. Robbie neglected that we're broadcasting today from Homiletical Tower here on the campus of Concordia Seminary, and rejoicing in our day of homiletical reflection here, that as I go, and it's time for me, in this text, to love the brethren, right? Because this is what this one is about, is to love one another. And so now I'm going to meet some Christian here in about 15 minutes. And if I ask God for the ability to love that Christian, you know what? He is going to give it to me, right? This is not, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes-Benz? You know, it's not. And it's not even a general theology of prayer. It's about bearing fruit. It's about, this is my commandment, that you love one another. And that's how that's how verse 17 ends, to end off the paragraph. Tauta, these things I am commanding you, namely, take the henna clause as explanatory again, that you love one another. Right? And so if people want to know what to pray for on the basis of this text, it's, Lord, make me a better husband. Make me a better neighbor. Make me a better colleague. You know, help me to bear with that unbearable person that gets under my skin. And you know what? I kind of think that God is very eager to give those answers to those prayers. It's like James 1. If you need wisdom, ask from God, and he'll give it to you. And don't doubt it, because he will give it. So again, it's a very powerful text. There's a lot of gospel in here, of course. As the Father has loved me, so I've loved you. The laying down of the life of the benefactor, if that's the right way to understand this image. So again, I really think that because John is like this, and almost every text in John has almost everything in it, you know, you kind of have to be focused and decide, okay, what do I actually want to accomplish, you know, by this text? Then you'll have to leave some things on the cutting room floor, if I could say it that way. But yeah, just a very beautiful proclamation that, of course, the disciples didn't get in the upper room. Just read on into chapter 18 and 19, right? But we have the benefit of being on the other side of things, and that means that we can end lectionary lunch by saying, of course, Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Hallelujah. And thank you for listening.
All right. Greetings.
Hey, guys.
Greetings.
Question on that gospel reading.
Yes.
The connection again with the fullness of joy and the commandments.
Yes.
I mean...